A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, as always, we have fantastic, well, the content of Royals discussion will be fantastic because it's us, of course, but I wish it was more fantastic things we were talking about. But before we get to that, introductions, of course, I am Jeff Herr. With me, as always, the indomitable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this fantastic evening?
You know what? The last week has been like a weird blur of way too much junk at work, so I don't really know.
Fair enough.
Sometimes we have weeks. Yeah, best way to put it. We did inventory, and that sucks.
Those are fun days.
Yeah, so spent 2.5 days fixing things that came up. So my brain is mush. So I withhold the right to take back anything dumb that I say on this episode,
which never happens. So I think you're in the clear.
We'll see.
With that said, we can just jump right into it. The Royals, you know, the ups and the downs of the last month or so seem to have kind of evened out a little bit, and they're, I don't know if I can say totally evened out, but they've just kind of the last week or so, they've just kind of middled around, won a couple, lost a couple. But there are a couple notable things. The number one biggest news of today, and we are recording this on, it is June 28th, right?
29th.
Goddamn.
Yeah.
June 20th. All right. So June 29th, we're recording this, and yep, that's the first day that we've heard. June 28th was the day that Lorenzo Cain had to exit the game against the St. Louis Cardinals with a hamstring injury. On the 29th, as of today, he was put on the 15-day DL. From the way Ned Yost was talking about it, it doesn't seem like he anticipates it being much longer than the actual 15 days. If it's truly just kind of a hamstring pull or like a strain or something, and not like, you know, whatever Gordon's thing was last year, where, you know, it's just a true tear or something of a muscle, then, just going to be kind of a rest and a little bit of rehabbing it, probably working with the trainers a little bit to make sure everything gets smoothed over. And hopefully that's the case and he can come back and he's ready to go and he comes back at full strength. You know, Lorenzo Cain has had a lot of these issues before when it comes to legs and his running and everything. And actually mentioned on the broadcast last night after it happened that he'd actually sought out the assistance of a local track and field coach in the Kansas City area, trying to fix the way he runs to prevent those from happening. Because if you remember, early in his career, 2012, 2013, that was the knock on him, was he couldn't get through a full season because he kept getting injured, and a lot of them were, you know, it wasn't like like Ken Griffey Jr. back in the day when he had those rash of injuries when he first
broken wrists a couple times.
Yeah, those were just, you know, running into the wall, different things that, you know, while I guess you technically can control, most of them kind of out of his control. But, you know, Lorenzo Cain, a lot of his injuries were one of those things where you don't really see it happening. He's just kind of sprinting, running after a ball, and then all of a sudden he pulls up lame, and next thing you know, he's out for a few games, a week or two or so, you know. So he seemed to have fixed those, been healthy the last couple seasons, and the Royals, I think, were able to figure out kind of a, for lack of a better term, rotation to keep him, you know, give him a good amount of days off, keep him fresh, keep him healthy, and for whatever, you know, just something, you know, you're not going to win them all, I guess. So hopefully he'll only be out for a few 15, for the actual 15 days, and then he'll be back ready to go. In his stead, Brett Eibner is brought up yet again, so we'll get another look at Brett Eibner at in some capacity over the next couple weeks and see how he does. You know, if he can kind of keep his hot start rolling, and if teams haven't really spent the time to try and figure him out because he's kind of been going up and down. Sometimes that can work to your advantage if you go up and down because teams say, okay, we don't need to worry about this guy anymore. He's in the minors, and then he comes up, and so teams don't have a ton of time to prepare. They don't have a ton of notes on him. So sometimes that can help, especially with a guy like Eibner who's got some kind of holes, if you will, in his game, offensively speaking. It might be a little beneficial that teams don't really key in on him a bunch. So they're just going to try and kind of challenge him and see where they go, see if he can handle it. And so far he's proven that he can. Hopefully that continues. And and again, hopefully it's only the 15 days. I don't have to rely on him a ton. What are your thoughts on this? I can't imagine they're all that positive, but
no, it's, you know, with Kane, he hasn't performed great. He had that hot stretch a few weeks ago, and he was really, you know, kind of, he started the year off slow, had that hot stretch to get back into kind of what you expect, or, you know, in that neighborhood, and had kind of, you know, bottom plateaued a little bit over the last couple weeks. But you know, he's so important for playing the outfield and covering so much ground out there. He's somebody you can feel pretty comfortable with in the, you know, middle of the order pretty much every day. So it's a blow. And for the Royals, who have already lost Mike Moustakas and they just got Alex Gordon back and they've had some pitchers go on the DL, you know, this is not something that they need to have happen. Especially with it being a leg injury and it's a muscle injury, and some of those things can linger. Now, in this case, they say it's a grade one hamstring strain, which is pretty mild from what at least the doctors on Google tell me, and other places on the internet. So if that's the case, best case is he's able to come back within 15 days. You've also got the All-Star break within some of this period. So, you know, maybe he's not going to miss a lot of games. So that can benefit the Royals if he's able to come back. It may just be that, you know, he needed 5 or so days to rest and they didn't want to just leave an empty spot. Plus, they didn't want to try to rush him back and have him run into any kind of setbacks or any lingering problems for the rest of the year. Because he's had, you know, a lot of, like you mentioned, he's had a lot of problems with his hamstring or just with his legs in general in the past. Though he's generally been past all that. He hasn't even been on this disabled list since April of 2014. So while he's got this label of being brittle or injury prone, it really hasn't happened that much. Now, before that, yeah, he would go on the DL pretty much, you know, it's once a year. He had that groin strain in 2012 and a lot of things in the minors, but generally, you know, in the last 2 years, he's been healthy. So this is kind of a tough setback for the Royals and the lineup and the whole team. But if it's minimal, then at least, you know, he can come back and hopefully be right back where he was, just go right back to it. And you get Eibner, who's coming up. He's, you know, he's seen some of the game now. He's been able to have some success. He's somebody who can fill in the field if he needed to. He can, you know, he can take over in any of the corner spots. You know, basically, he can play anywhere in the outfield, has a little bit of pop. And, you know, you've got other guys in the lineup who are hitting now, like Kendrys Morales. Sal Perez is still hitting. You know, Alex Gordon's back. That at least makes it so that the lineup isn't, you know, completely empty and left only to, like, Eric Hosmer. So you've got other guys who can fill in and do some things. So, you know, if best case, you know, maybe he misses 10, 12 games, whatever it is. That's the best case. If it's more than that, then you start getting into that kind of worrisome period because, you know, the Royals need to really, they need to pick it up right now. And, you know, it's not like they're falling completely behind or they're getting lost in the shuffle or anything, but Cleveland's playing so well and you want to put yourself in a position to be able to take over in the second half of the season, catch up to them, overtake them, and go for the division. And it's something that they need as many of their primary guys as they can get. They're already out Moustakas. So, you know, Kane, they need him to come back quickly and be the guy that we expect to have.
Yeah, you know, it feels kind of weird because when you look back at the last couple seasons, you think, okay, everything went the Royals' way. And for the most part, it did. But you kind of lump injuries into that because teams can't make runs like the Royals did without being healthy. And relatively speaking, the Royals, where we just mentioned, you know, mm-hmm. Kane, one of the more injury-prone players, hasn't really had a big injury fit the last couple of years. But, you know, the Royals haven't necessarily been scot-free in the injury department. Eric Hosmer missed a good chunk of time, almost an entire month in 2014, near the end of the season when the Royals were really moving into that stretch run there to go for that playoff spot. And thankfully, Billy Butler was able to come in and play well enough to compensate. But then you had last year in 2015, obviously, the Alex Gordon, now for almost 2 months he was gone for, mm-hmm. almost forcing the Royals' hand to go get Ben Zobrist. Who knows if they would have actually gotten him if Gordon wasn't hurt. They probably would have, but regardless, you know, Gordon was out for an extended period of time. So it's not like the Royals have been completely healthy and this is, you know, quote-unquote karma catching up to them or anything like that. So it's not... I think you've seen some people on the internet or, you know, on Twitter or whatever who will kind of make those kind of observations like, well, you know, the Royals have been so healthy. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, they've – relatively speaking, they have. They were definitely healthy for the playoffs last couple of years, but not entirely healthy the whole – both of the last season. So this is – but this year seems especially worse. I mean, it is especially worse. I mean, how many –
well, you're basically significant names, you know, I mean, Moose for the whole season, that's right away one of the big things. It just reminds me a little bit of like the Rangers a couple years ago where they just couldn't keep anybody healthy all year and just had a miserable season because of it. And the Royals are not having a miserable season, but they've lost some big names. They've been really fortunate that younger guys have come in and stepped up when those guys have gotten hurt, where, you know, in other years, you might not have seen that happen. So that's kind of the break that they've caught, is that the depth that they have is actually coming in and performing. But they haven't had good luck in the injury department. They've had, what, six guys on the DLs of you know, guys that they expected to compete and perform. Gordon, Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain now, Chris Young, Chris Medlin. Mike Minor's been on the DL this whole time. Who am I forgetting? I don't know. You know, Perez got hurt for a couple of days. So
Perez got hurt for a little bit.
You know,
and then even Eibner, after he came up and mm-hmm. started doing well, and they were like, okay, well, maybe he can give us some valuable time. Then he got injured. So even guys that they didn't anticipate were going to be big contributors that they thought might end up doing so still got injured.
Yep. But no excuses. They've still got to go out and play the games, and they're playing okay, just not great. You know, they can be doing a lot better. They're certainly performing in ways that are a little bit worse than in previous seasons, and I think that's why they're having a tougher go of it than, say, last year where they ran away with it, or even the year before where they had that really bad stretch, but they were pretty good other than, you know, that, what, late May kind of area. So they're having some issues and they've got to kind of work through it, but they're still kind of in it. You know, they're only six games back with more than 3 months to go in the season. So I don't know that, you know, you get too worried. It's just that you can't have any more injuries, and the guys that come back from injury have to play well, and, you know, just generally everybody's got to play well and the rest of the way for them to kind of get back to it.
Speaking of which, you mentioned Cleveland is charging everywhere, you know, just making waves. They're looking like when the Royals had their really hot runs the last couple of years. So with the gap starting to widen a little bit, tell me, Mike, make the assessment for me here. Should we start kind of shift our attention from another division championship to – we just need to get into the wild card, just get into the dance and see where that takes us in terms of, as fans, what should we be looking for? Or you still feel like the Indians maybe cool off a little bit, and the Royals still got a shot at this thing.
Well, I think with the Indians, they had a 9-game winning streak, and then they got to face Atlanta. So, I mean, that's just not fair for anybody. But, I mean, they've been pitching well, and that will carry them a long way. And that's the biggest separation between the Royals and the Indians right now, is that that pitching staff is just great. I mean,
It finally seems like it is what they've been saying it was going to be the last couple of years.
Yeah, they even have Trevor Bauer, who, you know, last year got kicked into the bullpen and everything. He's pitching well now, too. So they've got Kluber, Salazar, Carrasco, and Bauer, who are all throwing well. And they're throwing well enough that the bullpen, which is kind of shaky sometimes, doesn't get exposed as much. And defensively, they're a lot better. Offensively, they're fairly similar to the Royals of last year, where there wasn't like a standout, but there's a lot of guys who are average or above average. But I checked and I looked over the first 3 months for the last two seasons for the Royals, and just kind of looked at ERA and runs per game scored. The Royals in 2014 had a team ERA of 3.69 3 months into the season, and they were averaging 4.02. Or no, that's full season. These are full season stats. My mistake. But, I mean, that's 3.69 ERA, about four runs a game. Last year, it was 3.52 ERA and 4.47 runs per game. This year,
did you say this is the entire staff or just the starters?
This is the entire staff.
Okay.
Yeah, and no, these are 3 month stats. My notes are terrible. Like I said, Swiss cheese for brains this week. But the Indians, 3.49 ERA as a team right now, 4.92 runs per game.
Oh.
So for as good as the Royals were last year, the Indians splits right now in that department are just wider. So, that's something to kind of keep in mind. But again, it's only six games. There's with more than 3 months into the season, you're looking at, 12 plus weeks. If you make up a game every other week, you're tied with them. And the last three games of the season are in Kansas City against Cleveland. So there are going to be opportunities for the Royals to make up that ground. They're going to need better pitching, and they're going to need more consistent hitting, and they will need the Indians to cool off, which they will. I mean, the Cubs started out super hot, looked like they were going to set all kinds of records, and they don't even have the most wins in baseball right now. The Rangers have been hot, but they'll cool off. The Mariners were hot for a while. They'll cool off. Every team runs into some kind of speed bump. So I don't expect Cleveland to continue this. But with that starting rotation, they're worthy favorites for the division. So I wouldn't begrudge anybody to start being ready to accept the wild card, which is a weird thing to say as a Royals fan. Considering that not even 2 years ago we were popping champagne because they got into the playoffs at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what a difference.
What a difference a world championship makes, huh?
Right. And so, I'd also be foolish to count the Royals out of anything the way things have gone the last couple of years. So, they could just as easily rattle off a 10-game winning streak themselves if everything falls right. And if they catch Cleveland at a time where they're struggling, then it's right back into anybody's game. And that's kind of what you got to see happen. They got to pitch better. They got to hit more consistently or at least hit well enough when they have the opportunity to, and not try to make up 5-run deficits in the first 3 innings every night, which they've done a lot in the first half of the season.
And, I do think when it comes to those kinds of games, I don't think I think especially this Royals team, losses don't really carry over all that much, but it's got to be just physically and mentally draining to go up to bat in the bottom of the first or the top of the second and you're already down 5 runs, which the last week, 3 or 4 times that's happened. So that just, within the first 3 innings being down that many times, that's got to be frustrating. So that I got to imagine there's probably some carryover from that. But, it's a good point about the Indians, along with many other teams, kind of tapering off a little bit from just being so really hot. But it does seem like they are the they're kind of the best that right now. I feel like what Cleveland is doing is what people have been talking about the last couple of years, when everyone has been saying Cleveland was kind of the team to look for in the division. I think the Tigers were given the benefit of the doubt up until this season, basically just because they had won so many division titles in a row. But with Cleveland, you know, they had the pitching staff, they had really good, you know, on paper they had good talent, but they made the wild card game in 2013, and then they've had injuries and different issues and all that kind of stuff. And so they weren't really as good of a team as they were billed as being the last couple of seasons, at least in terms of their record. But now it seems like they're finally starting to capture that little bit. I mean, they've got the second highest run differential in all of baseball, I believe, or third highest. I think they're behind the Blue Jays and the Cubs. So yeah, Cleveland Indians, you know, they're performing like they were, like the prophecies foretold in years past. And, you know, hopefully the Royals, they just got to patch it together. It feels it probably is kind of contributing not only the mental exhaustion of just having games where you get behind so much so early, but just this season, it seems one hit after another. It's got to be mentally draining to have to prepare yourself like, okay, you know, if you're Eric Hosmer, like, I got to step up a little bit more now that Lorenzo Cain's out, or that Salvador Perez is out, or Moustakas, or Gordon, and, you know, all these things. And thankfully, Kendrys Morales is starting to come out of his extended slump a little bit to help lessen the load, if you will. So, you know, hopefully Royals will keep things patched together. They'll get healthy. They can get hot at the right time. And maybe we can have a really exciting end of the season series against Cleveland in Kansas City, and they can clinch another division title. So with that happy thought, we will go to a break. But if you stick with us, we've got some interesting questions we'd like to pose to you guys as the listeners, and of course to each other, that we'll discuss, and we'll give our answers, and we'll hopefully can hear some from you all as well on the questions that we have. So stick with us, and we will see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
The pitch to Orange. A little looping fly ball, base hit. One out again. And the back strike throw to the plate. He is safe. The game is over.
The Vault.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air-conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, first half, we just kind of gave a rundown of the recent happenings in Royal Land, and now we've got some interesting questions that we're going to kind of pose to each other and to you as the listeners. So this first one, I won't take the entire credit for. It's something that kind of not necessarily super original, but I heard it on 610 on the way home on the Danny Parkins and C-Dot show of the Danny Duffy question, right? So Duffy has – we've remarked pretty much every show since he's been back in the starting rotation about how well he's doing, and that has only been cemented by the start he had two nights ago where he just killed it, just had an absolute great start. The best start of any Royals pitcher this season, going through eight full innings at eight strikeouts, no walks, six hits, gave up two runs, gave up a two-run home run in the first inning, and then basically nothing after that. So he just had a fantastic start, and it's gone with – it's good to see that because he had a couple starts that were kind of iffy, and he wasn't – he didn't look as efficient as he had. So it was a concern. Like, hopefully he's not reverting back to the inefficient Duffy, but looked great. By all accounts, was great. So then the question that we're left with now is, if you're the Royals, do you make a move right now? Are you convinced that Danny Duffy is your guy and you are not convinced? We all know he's got the ceiling of being an pretty much an ace caliber pitcher, especially as a left hard throwing left-hander, right? Very valuable commodity in Major League Baseball. Very expensive if the results are there. So if you're the Royals, do you say, okay, we believe in Duffy. We think he's the guy. We think he can do this. We think he can keep this going for an extended period of time. And we're going to show that faith by trying to sign him now, before he does do it for an extended period of time, because if Danny Duffy were to continue the way he's going the rest of this season and then continue it all through next season, he will sign a nine-figure deal well into the nine figures that the Royals will not be able to match and won't be able to keep him here beyond 2017. So if you walked up to Danny Duffy today and you gave him a contract that he would possibly sign – say it was five years, $50 million. I believe I heard Jeff Passan on the radio say that he was pretty sure that Danny Duffy would sign that contract. If you start to dip below and you go like five years, $30 million, he might wait that one out and see if he can get better. So five years, $50 million seems like a pretty reasonable amount at this point for what Danny Duffy is. So Mike, the question I will pose to you, would you do that? Would you make, if you're the Royals, would you go and say 5 years, $50 million, dotted line, here's a pen?
I think five for 50 would probably work out pretty well. It's tough. The tough part of this question is that Duffy, like you said, hasn't done this for a full season. He hasn't been a starter for a full season. His track record is that he doesn't get through a lot of innings per appearance, that, you know, he's not efficient with pitches per inning, walks too many, has given up home runs. This year is the first time he's really handled any of that. You're just looking at him as a starter, you know, 58-11 strikeout to walk ratio, just excellent. He's given up homers, but he's not putting a lot of other people on base. And when you look at what he's able to do by, you know, his pitch efficiency, he's generally been significantly better. So, you know, maybe a couple starts where he was up there in the 17 pitches per inning or so, but you know, his last start was just like that. He gave up a two-run homer and shook it off, and for a while he looked like he was on pace for possibly a complete game. It was just up until, you know, the point that, okay, he was giving up, a few too many pitches per inning towards the last two that they were like, okay, we won't push it. So I think for $10 million a year, if you think that he's a guy who can get you 25 to 30 starts – you know, if they're quality, yeah, you can definitely pay that, especially with the way that the market goes. You know, when guys like Mike Leake, who, you know, has a pretty good track record, but he's making $15 million a year and you have to commit 5 years, you know, that's a difficult kind of one to go after just because, you know, you still don't really know. If you can get $10 million a year, you look at it from also the perspective that, let's say he can't start the whole time. Let's say that you still need to use him out of the bullpen. $10 million, you know, at this stage, $10 million a year for a dominant bullpen pitcher, it's not a ton. I mean, Joaquim Soria is making $8 million. Luke Hochever has a mutual option for $7 million. You know, other guys are making more than that. I think, what, Ryan Madsen got $10 million or something a year?
Yep.
From Oakland. So you look at what Duffy can do if you can also get innings from him as a starter, or if you just make him a shutdown lefty reliever, you know, that's something that teams are finding value in now. So 5 for $50 million, I think that my gut is yes, you would go ahead and do that. The question I would think is, where does it start to get pretty uncomfortable? You know, because he is someone that I wouldn't say you could expect to throw 200 innings a year. So that's not somebody that you would be going into like the $13, $14, $15 million a year range. There's probably an argument that 10 is still almost too much if you're not sure what you want to do with him. So I don't know where I fall on that. I think once you get into like the $13, $14 million a year, that's where you're starting to get a little rich for what you can expect. Yeah, so I think $5.50, that's probably a good range. I know that Dave Lesky in one of his Friday notes a few weeks ago put something forward like this. I didn't get a chance to go check the amount, but it was something like 4 years, $48 million, or 4 years and $46 million, or something like that. You know, with, you know, buyouts and options and all that stuff too, but. You know, the Royals, they were comfortable enough to commit 5 years to Yordano Ventura and basically buy up his arbitration years. They have two option years on him. So, you know, I would think that that's something that they could look at. It might be with Duffy, the deal might turn out to be like a 3 or 4 year deal with an option because he is 27 years old. And so, you know, if he's hitting the market as a free agent when he's 30, 31, something like that, that may be something he's interested in. So he might want to, you know, knock a year or so off. But I think if they took that to him, he would probably look at it.
Yeah. And, you know, just a minor correction. I think I said the Orioles, they lost to recently. It was the Houston Astros that they got pummeled by past weekend. But the thing with Duffy is you hit it right on the head there, I think, in the fact that relievers are becoming more expensive, especially really dominant ones. And the way the Royals value their bullpen, you know, the having Duffy there as a possible bullpen piece if you need him is perfectly fine. And like you said, you've got, you know, between Luke Hochever and Greg Holland obviously isn't on the team anymore, but if he was and he was healthy, you know, Davis, Holland, Soria, Hochever, I mean, all those guys would be kind of in that $8 to $10 million range already in terms of what their salaries are. So if you get a guy that his, you know, ceiling is a solid, really, you know, a high tier number three starter and maybe even a number two starter, and his floor is a dominant reliever, then you're probably not losing all that much. You're coming out ahead. I don't know if I should say ahead, but you're coming out even at worst on that. So
you're certainly not hurt by it.
No, absolutely not. It's not going to cripple you. And when you look at, and these are the kind of deals. These are why the Royals have been able to kind of parlay some of this success here. Because think about, okay, you've got Clayton Kershaw at the Dodgers, right? And David Price, the Red Sox, Zach Greinke and the Diamondbacks, all making $30+ million per year. Okay, now those teams obviously can afford it, but when you look at the Royals, you've got Edinson Volquez, Wade Davis, and Joaquim Soria right now that they've all got signed for the price of one of those pitchers. Okay, so, you know, how much more valuable is Clayton Kershaw than any one of those pitchers? A ton. But how much more valuable is Clayton Kershaw than those three pitchers? You know, then you're starting to close that gap considerably, especially when you've got, especially if you get the Volquez of last year, not the one we've seen struggling recently. But so, you know, these types of gambles, when you know you've got a fallback, are worth it, I think. And so I think the Royals think that way too. I'm sure they're probably working on something. It wouldn't surprise me. And Danny Duffy's that kind of guy. He doesn't seem like, you know, and I think Eric Hosmer, the odds of him signing in Kansas City, though slim, are higher than they once were, because I think he likes Kansas City. I think he likes the fans here. You know, it's different than when Carlos Beltran and Johnny Damon and all those guys couldn't wait to get out. It's different now.
Yeah.
But the even still, you know, Moose, Haas, those guys, they kind of get that. They've kind of got that big city, big team feel to them a little bit. So, you know, whether they actually leave or not remains to be seen. But Danny Duffy, he doesn't strike me like that. You know, he seems like a guy who he really likes the organization. He's very loyal. And I think that he would, similar to kind of a Gordon feel, that he would actively try and remain in Kansas City. So if you gave him a solid deal like that, and he thought it was kind of, if he wanted to bet on himself and say try and make that nine figure deal, then obviously he wouldn't. So if it's me, I'd do it. But we'll see if the Royals do, and we'll see what happens with Danny Duffy. I think they might give it at least another month. You know, worst case scenario, I guess, too, you can sign him, and then at some point he's going to have some trade value, whether it increases or decreases from here, who knows, but he's going to have some. So I guess that's worst case scenario. But
a young pitcher, he is going to have some value, and
I still has great stuff.
Yeah, and I think he said something the other day. He was like, talking about Sal Perez, he's like, I'd like to throw that guy the rest of my life. I was like, okay, that's – the Royals would probably entertain that. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. It probably wouldn't be until after the season, just because the Royals don't do a lot of that during season. But you never know. I mean, it might be something where he just tells them, hey, what do you want? You know, what do you want to keep me for? And if it's reasonable, he'll go for it.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I think it'd be nice to have him. It's nice to see him succeeding, especially when the Royals don't have much of a track record of developing starting pitchers, to see Duffy kind of come out of that and have success now. It'd be nice to be able to retain him and be able to bank on a guy that they've already developed. And maybe, you know, that allows them to get a hometown discount on any kind of extension. And hopefully he would then continue to perform the way he has the last, you know, since he came back to the rotation.
Indeed. And so that's kind of that was our first question for the evening. Here and now we've got a second question. So this one, we had, when talking about what we wanted to discuss tonight, we talked about the Danny Duffy idea, and this next question is one that we discussed the question, but in terms of our answers, we haven't really discussed any items of it. So I'm curious, Mike. Let me have it here.
Okay.
We've got, the Royals have three intriguing, if you will, prospects that have come up this year. So Chester Cuthbert, who's flashed some good power and some solid defense at third base. Whit Merrifield, who's surpassed everyone's expectations and played good defense, shows a really good utility role so far. And then Brett Eibner, who's had some decent power and come up with some pretty clutch hits in his limited time, and, you know, looks okay in the outfield. So between those three guys, a lot of fans really high on these guys, really like what they see, and are kind of predicting big things for all of them, from one segment of the fan base to another. So tell me, of those three, Mike, who do you foresee as having the best major league career?
I would say right now, to me, it's when you asked me this question before we actually jumped in here, my first reaction was Chester Cuthbert. As I've thought about it a little bit more, my answer is still Chester Cuthbert. For the simple matter that he's the youngest of those three. Eibner and Merrifield are both already 27 years old. Cuthbert's only 23, and he's playing at a comparable level to them in the big leagues now. He looks the part. He looks, we said it last year, he looked like a guy who knew he belonged in the league. And even though his numbers didn't look good, he looked like, you know, he could play a little. And that's not to take anything from Merrifield or anything from Eibner, who have both performed well. You know, Merrifield had a great minor league season a couple of years ago and has been okay the last two. He's jumped right out in this season and played very well. Eibner has played well in limited time. But, you know, we know the story on Eibner, that he's always had this trouble with strikeouts, that, you know, he's not always been as much of a contact hitter to take advantage of the power that he has. He doesn't get on base quite as much. He does take a walk. He's got a good track record of walking in the minor leagues. But, you know, the average hasn't been there. The hits haven't been there. And that can always stunt his performance. Merrifield has always been kind of a guy who's, you know, not a lot of power, can make contact, but will strike out. He's got speed, but he doesn't really walk. He can play all those positions, but he doesn't have like one that he excels at. So he's kind of like the you know, that phrase, jack of all trades, master of none. But he's performed and he's played well to the point that, you know, we've talked about it multiple times, that a lot of people really like him. So I think that they'll all contribute. I would say if I were to rank them, it'd be Cuthbert, Merrifield, and Eibner. I think Eibner may still have the most upside of all of them. You know, if he can actually figure out how to hit and like make contact, he might have 25, 30 home run power. But that's a big if. And that's the kind of thing that always kind of hampers any power hitter is, you know, if you strike out all the time, you really do have to hit those home runs. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do that. Merrifield, I think, can be a solid pro for a number of years. But Cuthbert right now, you know, you look at that aging curve that we've brought up multiple times, and it's pretty well known. You know, 23 years old, and he's already hitting at a level where you don't miss Moustakas as much. He's playing good enough defense that you don't miss Moustakas as much as you would have thought. He's got some power. He's walking a little bit more in the last month or so. So I would say that right now, yeah, he's probably a guy that by the time he's 25, 26, he might be a pretty good little player over there at third base. And that might be where Eibner and Merrifield are already kind of floating around and trying to see where, you know, where they land. But if they all three became solid pros, I'd be fine to be underestimating, you know, Eibner and Merrifield for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I'm inclined to agree with you on that. I think Chester Cuthbert to me was the one that I thought was probably going to end up being the best pro. I think he's got the most legitimate power. And I think if I were to say, okay, who has the possibility of having a, you know, season where they hit 300 and 20 home runs and play good defense, play every day, I'd say Chester Cuthbert is the most likely player to do that. Whether he will or not remains to be seen, obviously. But I think he's at least got the ceiling of being able to have that kind of an output for an entire season. I don't quite see especially that type of power output from Whit Merrifield. And no. I don't know that I see, like you mentioned, Eibner having the ability to have enough consistent contact and not, you know, frankly, not strike out enough to perform at that level. So I would agree that I think Chester Cuthbert's got the best prospects, and not so much with age, but just, I mean, that's definitely a factor, but for me, that wasn't as much of a factor in the decision. Is just like you said, seeing that he looks like he belongs, he looks like he's a little bit more comfortable than the other two, and he's also, since he's seen more time, and especially this year, you know, he started out pretty decent after first coming up to replace Moustakas, and then he kind of tapered down. He was back down to
the 230-250 range.
Yeah, it was really low at one point. And now he has really righted the ship. And, you know, there's always talk about, okay, you're going to come up, and if you have success, they're going to make adjustments, and you have to adjust to the adjustments. And that's kind of the never-ending trend of being a Major League Baseball player. And that's what he's done. So he's, you know, he's carried – he was up close to – to 300 for a little bit there, and now he's in that 270-273 is what he's currently at, with 306 on base, 436 slugging. So I mean, that's pretty solid. You'll take it. And you know, he's got 7 home runs in the majors between Major League and Triple A. He's got, I believe this is the most home runs he's had in his career for a single season. So that's encouraging,
and
especially
it's,
considering
it's not even July.
Yeah. And he's had, I mean, 7 home runs in 174 plate appearances. You know, that's on pace for a 20 plus home run season. Yep. So that's pretty solid, you know, and you'll definitely take that with a, if you can have a 7, you know, if he ends up with like a 720 OPS and hits 15 to 20 home runs and hits 265, 270. I mean, plays solid defense at third base. I mean, that's essentially outside of last year what Mike Moustakas has been his entire career. So
not even that.
A little bit better.
Yeah.
Bit better,
I mean,
so
he's, you know, just talking about like comparing him to Moose, that's exactly what I just looked up was where he was with Moustakas. And, you know, he's outperforming him. And, you know, I think that, you look at Cuthbert and you look at what his arm gives. He's not the most athletic, so I'm not sure how he's going to age as he goes through. But you could have said the same thing about Moustakas, and he's been fine. He's, you know, he's not in the greatest of shape. He's not Alex Gordon, but he's been good enough. Yeah, who is? It's unfair unfair level to reach if you're comparing fitness to Alex Gordon. It's like comparing your hair to Rusty Kuntz. It's just not
going to happen.
Don't do
it. It's
not
going to end well for you.
You can't make that comparison. So, you know, maybe that's something that he doesn't do well in later, but he definitely looks like he should be a guy who can do well. If he needs to move over to first, he could probably do that. You know, I don't know if it puts him in a position where you can feel comfortable trading Moustakas, but I think that he's definitely somebody who can do well. And since we agree on him, then what about the other two? Which do you think of Eibner and Merrifield will have a better big league career?
That's tough. You know, if I had seen a little bit more of Eibner, like I lean towards the raw tools of Eibner because I think he's got more of them. Whit Merrifield has obviously done more for a longer period of time so far this season, but both of them we're talking about small sample sizes, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
But if it's me and I had to make a decision, I actually might say Eibner because I think his defense is passable, but I think his power is legitimate, and I think he could hit more home runs in a season than Chester Cuthbert, and if he can just, you know, maintain a good plate approach and find a little bit more ability to make some additional contact, then I think his batting average would come up a little bit more, put him more in line with making him an everyday player. And I think Merrifield, you know, can give you that decent batting average, and he's going to give you the really good defense, and the power, just there's not much there, I don't think. I think he said like 2 home runs, which is honestly more than I would have expected at this point from him, but still. So, you know, I think Merrifield has a better chance at a longer pro career just because of the nature of how valuable utility players are.
Right. But he could be Luis Soho playing till, you know, 39.
Yeah, he might play at least 37, 38. But in terms of who have the better, you know, who will be better at their peak, I would say that if given the opportunity, the same opportunity for both of them, I might lean towards Eibner.
So you'd say basically Eibner would have the lower floor but higher ceiling, Merrifield the inverse of that.
The wider variance.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that makes sense. I think, you know, Merrifield could probably have more longevity just because he can, you know, he can play everywhere. He can play in either corner outfield spot, second base, third base, shortstop in a pinch. He's played first. You know, he can probably do all of that just fine. And that would probably, you know, he could probably latch on to some team, especially in the National League. I know Clint Scholes always brings that up, that Merrifield's like a National League type of player. which he's on the most National League type of American League teams. So that's fitting. But yeah, I think that's probably about right, that he would be destined for a longer career, but you know, not going to be a superstar by any stretch. But we could be surprised. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He's hitting 307. If he continues to do that, that could be something. But I don't know if we
expect him to do that. I'm trying to think if there's been a player that I can recall that came up so late in their career after being a career basically nothing, and not nothing, but nothing exceptional in the minor leagues, and then having, you know, not only a decent major league career, but actually turning into a really good player. I can't think of one. You know, the closest is another former Royal, Mike Aviles. He came up late in his career, age wise, had a really good season, but he's tapered off. You know, he's made himself a pretty good career.
Considering he's still in the league,
minors. But all the same, he's had some pretty lean years in there. So I feel like the same future is foretold of Whit Merrifield, but. You know, I don't know. I mean, can you think of anyone off the top of your head that's come up that late in the game and then just kind of exploded more or less?
Not anybody who's come through minor league systems. I mean, we've seen it with the guys like, you know, Cuban players who make the big leagues at a certain level, but
players or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, but they've been playing like as the best player in their league for a while and are coming over. It's not like they're guys like Merrifield who have been scraping and grinding for a couple of years at AAA level and never got the call. It's pretty much, you know, I think Aviles is the first guy that I thought of. I know that Clark Fosler at BPKC has come up with a list right after Merrifield, like I think after the first week. I don't have it in front of me, but should definitely try to track it down. But there weren't a lot. There weren't a lot of like players that turned into strong everyday star level players consistently for their career. You know, Aviles had a really good year as a rookie, and that was kind of it. You know, he's kind of bounced around Boston, Cleveland, Detroit. You know, he's been I think Toronto he was with briefly. I don't know if he ever played for Toronto. I think he was sent there and then traded for a manager. Which is weird. Like, that doesn't happen often. But he's still got a job. So, you know,
still getting that major league paycheck.
If you show that you can play, you know, he plays three infield spots and they put him in the outfield the last two places he's played. So, you know, if Merrifield's playing into his mid 30s, he's definitely not going to complain, I would imagine. So,
no.
Yeah, but Aviles is kind of the guy that I think of first in that kind of group. And I think that nobody jumps out is probably the biggest proof of that concept, that there's just nobody who comes up. You know, it's kind of like Paulo Orlando, who just debuted when he was 30. I mean, guys just generally don't spend that much time in the minors. There's usually a reason why they waited that long to get their shot. And it's because they're either not that good or they're not seen as that big of a prospect or big of a, you know, a performer that team needs to bring him up and needs to invest the time and the roster spot and things like that on him until they reach a point where, you know, you have to bring up Orlando because he's playing well and you need the spot, or someone like Merrifield where Omar Infante just can't do it, or et cetera, you know, whatever circumstances bring up those guys. I think there's a reason they stay in the minors for so long. And, you know, you kind of see where that expectation comes from. You know, when they come up, you don't expect a lot. So when they do well, it kind of sticks out then. But, you know, the test is like Cuthbert, you know, how you adjust, how you continue to adjust, and how that develops through the rest of your season. And if that goes well, the rest of your career at the big leagues, or if you have to keep you going to the minors and bouncing around a bit. So, I think Merrifield will probably be playing longer than Eibner, but maybe if Eibner turns it on, he may have a couple of years where he's pretty decent as a kind of lower the like bottom of the order power hitter type of guy. That would make some sense to me.
Yeah, I I would agree, but it's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. You know, who will how they'll all turn out. And oh, I remember what I was going to say. So the only time I think you see guys kind of emerge to stardom, if you will, a little bit later in the aging curve is with pitchers. You know, so Jake Arrieta is a guy that comes to example. I mean, the Orioles basically dumped him; they gave up on him, and you know that's a little harsh, I think, but they. You know, they sent him along, and then he's become a superstar with the Cubs. And then you've got, you know, players like Chris Archer. You know, he was a little bit older in the curve when he had bounced around to a couple different teams before he really took off. You know, Trevor Bauer now, he's not that old, but, you know, he's on his second organization, and he's been having some difficulties maybe starting to come into his own. But, you know, Danny Duffy, I mean, he's in that – how is Duffy, 26? Or so, 27, okay. So, you know, I mean, that's, you know, some, you know, the Steven Strasburgs of the world that came in and dominated right away, you know, those guys are clear-cut superstars. And it's every once in a while you see pitchers, I think, a little bit later on the curve, but hitters, you just typically don't see it. So when it comes to, like you mentioned, the Paolo Orlandos of the worlds and the Whit Merrifields, ride it while you can. And there's nothing wrong with them as players, and they have value to organizations. But in terms of trying to imagine them as pivotal pieces, you're putting your eggs in the wrong basket.
Right.
I don't think that's where you need to focus your energy. You should probably focus your energy on getting better starting pitching if you're the Royals, because it has been woefully, unfortunately bad. And it's not something that we're necessarily going to cover in this show. But possibly a future show, look into that a little bit, why they've been so bad. We talked about the home run thing in the past, and possibly maybe, I don't know, maybe we can look into some trade targets or something. That's all we have for today for the show.
We've run out of show.
We've run out of show. Yes,
we're flat out. We're expecting another shipment next week.
As in, yes, please stay tuned. Depending on when we get the show up, we should be able to get it up Thursday, June 30th, as we typically do. Mike does a great job getting the show turned around really quickly. So if we do, and if you're one of the fans who listens to it right when it's ready and you're listening, then we have a Kelly's Watch Party June 30th, Thursday night, June 30th, Royals Cardinals. It's in St. Louis, obviously. So if you're listening to this and you need a reminder, here it is. Come up. My wife is going out with some friends tomorrow night, and I'm watching the baby. I am contemplating putting her Royals onesie on and dropping by Kelly's for a little bit. So I'm hoping I can make it at least for a small period of time. But if not, there's definitely – we have some confirmation. A lot of the BP Kansas City guys are going to be there. Should be fun times had by all. And Kelly's obviously always a great host, such a gracious sponsor to our show, and just fantastic times all around there at Kelly's Westport Inn.
And if you're listening to this on Friday, it was awesome, and you totally
it was
out.
So great.
It was so fun. Totally. Can you believe that one thing that happened?
Oh, my God. It was so crazy.
Like, who knew that thing would happen?
I had no idea.
On a Thursday night.
I couldn't even imagine. And all of a sudden, here we are.
You just had to be there, you know?
Yep, one of those things. I can't properly explain it unless you were there.
Yep, it'll be a memory for everyone.
Forever. Indeed. Something that I will truly never forget.
Right.
So anyway, but thank you guys so much for listening. We couldn't do this show without you. Love all our listeners. And if you would like to chime in with your answers to the questions we pose, please feel free. And we'd love to hear from you guys. Love to hear from all our fans and love to get your guys' input. So feel free to drop us a line and let us know what you think on the questions we pose this show. And if you have an intriguing answer and we like what we hear, then we mention it on air. We'll send you some Kelly's gift certificates. And if you do it fast enough and you're confirming that you're going to be there tomorrow night, if you hit us up on Twitter with some answers to these questions, then we might have some Kelly's gift certificates waiting for you there, if that's the case. So you might even be able to come out and get some free drinks on us.
If that's something you may be interested in.
I don't know.
Seems like our crowd would be.
I would be interested in, but I can't speak for everyone.
Don't want to project.
Only speak for myself.
Right.
Yes. So with that, we will end the show. Thank you again so much for listening, as always. We love our fans. Thank you so much to Kelly, who's our sponsor. Hopefully to see you guys all out there tomorrow night, or whenever, I guess tonight if you're listening to it on the 30th. Love Kelly's, always a good time. Love seeing all the listeners and everyone at the tweet ups or whatever you want to call them. So hopefully we'll see you. Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next time, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.